Welcome to the Table Podcast, where we discuss issues of God and culture. Brought to you by Dallas Theological Seminary.
Okay, now you've talked a little bit about, we've talked about the existence of the synagogue and the growth of Messianism. Now, another dimension that's very important in thinking about being a Jewish believer is the whole, I would say, double combination of persecution and anti-Semitism. And I'm going to put them side by side because on the one hand, there is the reaction of many people that Messianics are Jewish. And so the anti-Semitism comes in. But then there is from the Jewish side, at least from a significant portion of the Jewish side, that you're not really Jewish. So explain the life of a Messianic in that tension.
Oh, that's very like, yeah, you touched a very painful area uh-huh. for the Messianic movement. We got to defend the right of our existence as Messianic Jews on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
We need to defend before Christians that we are to exist mm-hmm. as the Messianic Jews, as something different, distinct, in unity mm-hmm. with everybody else, but still something distinct, what is important in the divine plan. And at the same time, we need to prove the right of our existence as a Jewish movement to our fellow Jewish people.
Mm-hmm.
Usually the Orthodox Jews would say, well, the Messianic Jews, they are Jews, they are Jewish, but sort of like sinful.
Mm-hmm.
They are wrong. Mm-hmm. They are like, they are more or less like in false teaching. They believe
so they're
in false
ethnically Jewish, but religiously heretical.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
For Reformed Jews, we are not Jewish.
Uh-huh.
Huh. There was an interesting discussion I had with Reform Rabbi just recently. I was told that I'm not Jewish, that
yeah,
Jewish
well,
people don't...
I was going to allude to this later, but you've brought it up now, so okay. Let's go after it. You were in a meeting in which you were, I think, explaining to people how to share with their Jewish neighbors, et cetera, and in attendance was a rabbi of one of the rabbis at the I think it's the largest Reformed seminary in the city.
Synagogue, yeah, temple, yeah.
In
the nation, actually.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. And it's literally located almost across the street from where my kids went to high school, and that high school was nicknamed Hebrew High. So for those of you who are in Dallas, that's Hillcrest. And so, so this is not an insignificant conversation that's taking place. And so you're sharing how to share with Jewish people about their interest in Yeshua and Jesus and that kind of thing. And this rabbi speaks up, and I'll let you pick up the story from here.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Thank you. It was actually an event entitled Jews and Christians Talking Together.
Okay.
So it was like social in gathering event to discuss for Christians and Jews to talk together about some things and issues that we
share.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like for example, this time it was entitled Standing Against Rising Anti-Semitism and uh-huh. How Jewish is Christianity. And yes, we had a number of Jewish people in attendance and a rabbi of this Reformed temple. And I was told that I'm not Jewish because I believe in Jesus. And
By the rabbi?
Yeah, the rabbi. Mm-hmm. And my response couldn't be based on the Bible
mm-hmm.
because in Reformed Judaism, it's not necessary that what was there in the Bible centuries ago is relevant for today.
Mm-hmm.
So we take from the Old Testament, from the Torah, what is appropriate for today, mm-hmm. usually the position. But there is something different what is important for the Jewish people mm-hmm. These days, particularly in the United States. It's like a marker of Jewish identity, the Holocaust. So mm-hmm. what does it mean to be Jewish? More than 70% of the Jewish people in the United States say remembering Holocaust. Mm-hmm. So I had to address this issue. Mm-hmm. So I told, you know, what makes us all Jewish is that Reform, Orthodox, Conservative, and Messianic Jews, Catholic Jews, mm-hmm. Evangelical Jews, mm-hmm. will go to the same gas chamber. Mm-hmm. So what makes us all Jewish is the concentration camp and the gas chamber. Hmm. Because when the Holocaust comes, when the trouble comes, it's not what we
Everybody's
believe in.
Everybody's included.
It's not what we believe in. Mm-hmm. It's who we really are, according to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob.
And in making that picture, you're actually making a point not just about the past, but you're making a point about who is vulnerable to anti-Semitism even today.
As a Jew in Berlin, my life was threatened a couple of times. Mm-hmm. Nobody cares mm-hmm. what I believe in. If mm-hmm. somebody hates Jewish people, mm-hmm. I'm a Jew. Mm-hmm. They don't care about differences between us. Mm-hmm.
Hmm. That's it's an interesting response and an interesting observation. And it shows the delicacy, I think, of what it means to be Jewish. Because, again, I think some people think they don't think of Judaism and being Jewish particularly in ethnic terms. Sometimes they think about it exclusively in religious terms. And the term is actually broader than that.
Yeah, that's very true. And let me point to something in my personal story in mm-hmm. this regard. For me, as I mentioned before, being Jewish was just a matter of destiny. Mm-hmm. It was something unavoidable. Mm-hmm. I'm born a Jew, I will die a Jew. Mm-hmm. And it's like struggle. If you remember Fiddler on the Roof, mm-hmm. Tevye was complaining if you needed a nation or mm-hmm. needed a people, why
why us?
Why yes. us? Yeah, yeah. Why not, yeah. Why not somebody else? Yeah. So it was my attitude, why mm-hmm. me. I consciously became Jewish mm-hmm. after I believed in Jesus, actually. Mm-hmm. Becoming a Messianic Jew, starting reading the Bible, I understood my calling, not just my destiny, mm-hmm. but also my Jewish calling in this life.
And your roots in many ways.
My roots.
Yeah.
And for me, I discovered the Christianity, even as the Jewish sect of the first century mm-hmm. AD. So for me, it was like coming home. Mm-hmm. And being Jewish makes sense for me today. Mm-hmm. Like years ago, before I came to believe in Yeshua and Jesus, it was not making much sense. Mm-hmm. It was destiny. Mm. After, it became calling. I became more observant as a Jew mm-hmm. after I became a believer. So I stopped eating like pork and seafood mm-hmm. after I mm-hmm. became a believer in Jesus. Not because I'm legalistic or under the law, but because I consider that as part of my calling and my covenant fidelity together with the Jewish people.
Now, I have two topics I want to be sure and cover before we wrap up. So I'm going to deal with first. We've sort of introduced it, anti-Semitism, but give us your take. I'm asking you to comment on the kind of the messianic experience in various parts of the world. Give us your take on what is happening with regard to anti-Semitism, particularly in Europe today.
Well, it's getting bad. Mm-hmm. As I said, we moved there 20 years ago, and Germany is probably the most or the safest haven for the Jewish people today. Because of the Holocaust, because sensitivity to the Jewish people, because the political sanctions, because the politically and on all levels of society, Germany tries to protect Jewish people from any kind of anti-Semitism. But even in Germany, over the last 20 years, I experienced a dramatic change. Not even talking about other countries mm-hmm. where the anti-Semitism was strong even earlier, but the anti-Semitism is rising in Europe, I would say, due to a couple of different reasons. Mm-hmm. One of them is very strong Islam, mm-hmm. Islamic influence, immigration from Middle East with people coming to the countries with their embedded hatred toward the
what
Jewish people.
What percentage of Europe is Muslim today?
Well,
do you know? I know it varies from country to country.
Yeah, it's pretty. It's pretty big. I mean, it's not like every second is Muslim, but just if in Germany, I would say probably like 7%. Okay. Although I'm not sure. It's just number that I could set together, thinking of like 6%.
Because Turkey is a country for Germany, much like Mexico is for the United States, in terms of the way immigration patterns happened and the way in which certain labor was undertaken by a certain segment of the population, mm-hmm. that kind of thing.
But look, if to take. The school where our daughters attend in Berlin, mm-hmm. every third or even possibly every second in the class mm-hmm. is a Muslim.
Mm-hmm.
It says something about big cities, mm-hmm. Particularly. And I'm not talking now about Islam. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about the hatred to the Jewish people mm-hmm. that is brought from the Middle East and also from the countries that are affected by
this. And it's kind of a two-edged sword on the one hand, because you've got more Muslims in the country, but you also have these European countries developing some sensitivities towards the Muslim immigrants who are in their country, and with an awareness of how they view certain issues, et cetera, and that ends up being pushing back on the Jewish population in what's left of it in Europe.
Yes, but let me also elaborate on this a little bit more.
Okay.
So the immigrants mm-hmm. they are not enculturated enough to understand, even in Germany, the sensitivity right. regarding Jewish people. So they are not adjusting to the culture and dialogue in the society.
Right.
They bring their anti-Semitism immediately to all possible expressions.
Mm-hmm.
Also, what we see in France, it's
even more.
But it's because they are not adjusting to the European sense of tolerance, democracy, and stuff. But at the same time, after the Holocaust, European society was very careful with the Jewish people, mm-hmm. even in general.
Mm-hmm.
And even regarding Israel, mm-hmm. just Israel was the country for like weak, oppressed, and persecuted Jewish people to survive.
And there was a shadow of guilt about what had
taken
place. Yes.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Today, in the last 20 years, I saw that completely reversed. Now the Palestinians are weak and oppressed, mm-hmm. and the Israelis are militant and strong and ugly mm-hmm. because of that. So the society in Europe in general getting anti-Israeli more and more.
Is that because the further away we get from the Holocaust, the more we're losing the memory of it?
Absolutely. That's the key.
Mm-hmm.
So the memory is lost, and the card of the Holocaust for play mm-hmm. is already not playing mm-hmm. as it used to before. Now the attitude against Israel is often considered not as a part of anti-Semitic attempt, but it serves to influence the anti-Semitism, to infuel it, to make it even stronger, because in the minds of people, Jews and Israel are attached to each other.
Hmm.
Every time there is war in Israel, a war with Gaza, the anti-Semitism is coming to the new high.
Hmm.
So it's anti-Israeli sentiment brings more of anti-Semitism. It's related.
And so one of the examples is after the attack in France on the French newspaper, there also were reprisals against Jews in France and pressure on Jewish communities in France. And my understanding is that they're actually, if you're a Jewish in France, I mean, it even got to the point of people removing the thing you put on the doorpost that identifies you as a Jew.
Mezuzah?
Yeah, the mezuzah. even pulling those off their doorposts so that they're not identified as Jews, so they might not be subject to physical attack.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It's like Jewish people becoming mezuzah indoor houses.
Uh-huh.
So mezuzah is inside, not on the outside.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. It's every sign of a Jew in Europe is brings a danger attached to that. So I'm wearing my kippah all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So at first, like even years ago, like 15 years ago, I was walking with my kippah on the streets of Berlin, and then my life was threatened a couple of times because of that.
Mm.
So it took a miracle for me to stay alive and healthy.
Mm-hmm.
But my wife convinced me or pushed me to wear a hat on the top of it. So that's what I do, because every evident sign of belonging to the Jewish people in Europe brings danger.
So that's where the practice of wearing the hat came from. I didn't know that. That's a new story for me.
Well, I'm wearing a hat that is more like stylish.
Yeah, I know.
Not like
I know.
Jewish.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, no, I've seen you in the equivalent of what we would call a baseball cap here. And I've seen the European cap that is very stylish.
Exactly.
So you've done it well, but anyway, I didn't know that it was part of the story. That's interesting. But it shows how serious things are. This is not a theoretical anti-Semitism that we're dealing with. It is there and is real. People feel it and are impacted by it.
That's very true.
Yeah.
That's very true, and it's growing.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. Well, the last topic I want to cover before we wrap up, because our time is slipping from us, is helping. I mean, this has kind of been a factual podcast in many ways, getting people oriented to what is Messianism and how it works and that kind of thing. And I kind of want to divide this last 10 minutes into kind of two parts. One is help people who are not Messianic, who are Gentile, understand kind of where Messianics are coming from on the one hand. That's what I want to do first. And then I want to talk about obviously, if you meet a Messianic, and particularly if you're a believer, you have something in common you can share, and there's a way to connect. And even though there might seem to be differences in practice and that kind of thing, there is a core unity there that one can work with. But then the other hurdle that some people have is, how do I share with my Jewish neighbor, not Messianic, that kind of thing. So I want to kind of take those in turn. So first, let's talk about relating to the Messianic. What should the average person who's in a church appreciate about Messianics? This is kind of an opportunity to discuss the value of the space of being a Messianic, of being in that space.
Hmm. Well, it's a good question. It's too little time to respond to that.
Yeah.
To say it precisely and briefly, the fact that there are Jewish people who believe in Jesus as Jewish people, as I said, it's important part of eschatology, end times. It's important part of ecclesiology.
Mm-hmm.
It's important for the church. It's very encouraging. It's an evidence that Jesus is the Messiah, because God never rejected his people. There is a remnant, and God is the God who is faithful to his covenant. That's what we read in the book of Romans. Paul was writing, God never rejected his people. He is true to the covenant he made. He's the God who keeps his promises. And Paul was saying, as a Jewish believer, I'm like witness of it. I'm testimony. I'm evidence.
And there's continuity with the past, that what you believe in. You sometimes hear the phrase that a Messianic is a completed Jew. And the idea is they are participating in promises that God has always said, this is the direction the program has been in. Jesus is the Messiah of Israel, and that's part of what's being embraced.
Right. By the way, be careful with the word incomplete Jew to the Jewish people, because nobody wants to be incomplete, considered incomplete.
Right.
But Jesus fulfills the calling of Israel, mm-hmm. and in Jesus, Israel fulfills its calling.
Mm-hmm.
So, looking at seeing a Jew who believes in Jesus, somebody can rejoice because he sees an evidence of God's faithfulness, his existence, the reality of God's working in this world. And I'm not trying to say that Jewish people are more important, better than anybody else. We're not worse than others at the same time either. But it's just something what God gives as an evidence mm-hmm. of his faithfulness and his existence. And in order to see that there are Jewish people who believe in Jesus, the Jewish believers in Jesus have to make themselves visible.
Mm-hmm.
And the Messianic movement, Messianic Jewish movement, mm-hmm. because there are many Gentiles mm-hmm. who like to pray Messianic. I'm not talking about these guys,
right.
with full respect. But in order for people to see that, they need to see the Jewish believers. The Jewish believers in Jesus, we need to make ourselves visible. And the Messianic Jewish movement is a visible expression that is needed.
So your point here, because I think it's an important one, is not so much to... It isn't that Messianics see themselves as being so different that they need to stand out and be distinct and saying, oh, we're better than you are. It's Mm-mm. it's the issue here is we are expressing who we are and where we have come from and where we still feel connection with. And that connection goes back to promises made all the way back in Genesis 12.
Absolutely.
And the flip side of it is, if I can move the time machine in the other direction, is if we think about Romans 9 to 11 and what Paul has to say about the continued commitment of God to his people, the fact that one day a mass of Israel will be responding, and that there's always a remnant that exists in the midst, that's the proof of which Paul is the proof of it, that all that is a way of saying, as well as the statements in the New Testament about the body being made up of Jew and Gentile in one body, not with the idea that everyone gets homogenized, but with the idea that in the midst of that diversity, you actually see visibly the reconciliation that God has brought between people.
Absolutely.
All of that is at work as an explanation and to some degree a justification for why Messianics exist and why they should be appreciated.
It has to come from two sides.
Mm-hmm.
So that Messianic Jews, we need to appreciate the Christians
mm-hmm.
and Christians need to appreciate the Messianic Jews
mm-hmm.
for our unity to be visible in appreciation of each other. That's very important.
Because ultimately, this is one body of Christ that we're talking about.
Absolutely, mm-hmm. and the body of Christ, as we see in the Bible, it is a unity of Jews and Gentiles.
Mm-hmm. It's a unity with diversity built into
exactly.
it.
Exactly, yeah. Absolutely. So it's unity of Jews as Jews and Gentiles as Gentiles.
Mm-hmm. And so we see, just to play this out a little bit, although I wish we don't have near the time, we don't have any time to develop it. And so you see discussions in the New Testament about certain people whose practices still remain aligned to Jewish practices on the one hand for Messianics who are part of the community. And then you see other explanations that say that people who choose not to live that way are also to be... So you're not supposed to fight over those things in a way that gets in the way of the inherent unity that we all have with one another.
I would say we are not to fight about it, but we are to engage each other in a healthy dialoguing and a healthy debate,
mm-hmm.
just because I love to debate and argue. So if we can respectfully argue,
that's
yeah,
right.
exactly. So we don't need to talk just about things we agree on.
Right.
We can share our disagreements and we can complement each other mm-hmm. by disagreeing and arguing with each other.
And reflecting on the conversation.
Exactly.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that takes care of one part of the last piece that I want to cover. And now, in the remaining time that we have, what advice would you give to people? I know you do this all the time, and you talk about this topic all the time. And in fact, we could probably do a whole podcast on it. In fact, we probably should plan to do that one way or the other, whether by Skype or when you're back in Dallas. But in kind of an initial way, what kind of initial suggestions would you give to the person who says, you know, I have a Jewish neighbor, but I'm just not sure how to even start the conversation? What advice do you have?
Jewish people, there are two words in this phrase. Jewish and people. Jewish people are people. They have the same needs as everybody else. They get sick as everybody else. They have challenges in life and family problems as everybody else. They have teenage kids as everybody else can have. They have fear of death as everybody else. So they're people. The same felt needs as everybody else. So thinking of the Jewish people, think of people.
So in some words, don't let the Jewishness of the person you're interacting with so get in the way of the way you interact with someone that you don't interact with them fairly normally.
You need both. So first you understand that they're just people. They don't have special horns somewhere. So they're people with the same needs. So they need Jesus and his help and his assistance in their life the same as everybody else does. And they struggle the same as their Christian neighbors in times. And they rejoice the same as their Christian neighbors in times. Another word in this phrase is Jewish, and it makes them sort of special. Special because of their relationship with Christianity. For more than 1,000 of years, so like I would say probably like for at least 17 centuries, if not more, church was pushing us to convert to Christianity. And converting to Christianity meant that we need to stop being Jewish. We need to abandon our people. We need to abandon the covenant that we have with God, becoming Gentiles. So the no-go for Jewish people regarding Jesus was developed over the centuries and centuries. So that's why...
Because it inherently not only meant a religious move, but it almost meant a move of denial of identity.
Exactly. Yeah. Primarily.
Yes.
It was not about belief.
Right.
It was about identity. Exactly.
Yeah.
And also, what is special about Jewish people is the fact that Jesus is Jewish. He is the King of the Jews. He was, he is, and he is coming back as the King of the Jews. Apostles are Jewish. New Testament is a bestseller of a Jewish literature. It's the most published, printed, and given away Jewish book ever. So it's not just New York Times bestseller. It's all times bestseller. At the same time, the gospel that we preach is essentially good news for the Jews. In its essence, it was proclaimed to the Jewish people and by the Jewish people, and it was promised to the Jewish. So everything what you can bring to the Jewish people in Jesus is Jewish by its essence. So it's sort of natural, but you need to bridge this historic gap between the Jewish people and their Messiah, who became initially Gentile-ish, so to speak, for them. So just going to a Jewish person, fulfill your great commission, according to Romans 11:11, to provoke them to jealousy. So make them jealous, but make them jealous in a Jewish way, appreciating the roots of the gospel, the roots of the New Testament, and the roots of the Christianity. Like in the way I'm giving an example, you talk to a Jewish person and you say something like this: you know, your Messiah made me happy. Your Messiah forgave all my sin. Your Messiah gave me quality new life that will never cease. Your Messiah blessed me so abundantly, and I'm just, your Messiah is the best what I have in this life. Do you know your Messiah? His name is Jesus. So provoke them to jealousy as people and communicate the Jewish nature of the gospel bridging the gap that the church developed with the Jewish people over centuries.
Well, there's a whole history of that conversation. There's a whole way of expectations that many Jewish people have when you even evoke the name of Jesus that is a part of that conversation. That's a topic for a completely different podcast. There's no way to do it and append it to this general overview on kind of messianism. So, Vlady, you can consider this an invitation to have you back to discuss that topic in full and take a fuller and richer look at it, because I know that one of the important values of the Messianic community is this bridge that it forms that allows people to hear and share about the Messiah. Although it must be said, and this is important to say, is that many Jewish people who are drawn to Christ are often drawn to Christ because of the testimony of a Gentile believer who's opened the door for them.
Exactly. That's absolutely true. I know many hundreds of Jewish people who became believers in Jesus because of the testimony of their Christian friends. And Christians can reach out to the Jewish people, to their neighbors, friends, and colleagues that no one missionary to the Jewish people can ever do.
It's a fascinating, that's a whole fascinating discussion all by itself. So we'll definitely regather at some point in the future and discuss this. I really appreciate you coming in to talk with us about this. It's a topic that we both share a deep interest in and have, of course, have been involved in Messianic ministry for a long time together. And so it's an important conversation, and I thank you for taking the time to come in and talk with us. And we thank you for coming and being a part of the table and hearing our discussion. This is The Table, where we discuss issues of God and culture, and we look forward to seeing you again soon.
Thanks for listening to The Table Podcast. For more podcasts like this one, visit dts.edu/thetable. Dallas Theological Seminary. Teach truth, love well.